6. Three things Naomi Williams knew about her mother: that she was smart, athletic, and had horrible taste in men. Worse, Naomi knew that she herself was exactly the same in all three respects. The difference was that Naomi had seen her mother's mistakes. She'd watched them play out one after another as easily predictable slow-motion car wrecks. She was keenly aware where each and every twist of the wheel and stomp of the brake had caused the careening momentum of her mother's life to go into an unrecoverable spin. She knew from careful observation how to drive a life in order to crash it, and she was not about to make the same desperate moves with her own. She kept up her grades. She had decent extracurriculars, and she knew what she wanted. She had planned and rehearsed her post-high school escape route so many times she could drive it in her sleep. But then, the night of graduation, she got pregnant, and all that shit was out the window, because she had to have the baby. It wasn't her family who were the religious freaks. She and her mom and whoever her current stepfather was went to church on Christmas and for funerals like most people did around here. But Mike's family, Jesus Christ, no pun intended, the Snyders banged the God drum hard. That wasn't unusual. There were a lot of religious people in this part of the country. Ever since the big wave of evangelism that spread around the South and Midwest in the late 1970s, but the Snyders were born-again chest beaters. Not the haunted, reliably depressive old kind of Catholic, but the joyful, new kind of Catholic. They loved everybody. I mean, they really, actually loved you. The Snyders had 5 kids, and though each one of them started out fairly normal and willing to grab the occasional beer or take a hit off a joint, by the time they hit 14 or 15, their parents had roped them into the family spiritual racket. It wasn't like it was a scam or anything. They really meant it. Naomi thought it was cool at first. There was a lot of love and attention, way more than she got at home. And when she and Tara Snyder became best friends in 8th grade, Naomi started sleeping at their house 2 or 3 nights a week. Her own mother, distracted by her decaying 3rd marriage, seemed grateful that Naomi had a place to go. As the God love spread throughout the Snyder family over the next couple of years, Naomi and Tara managed to skate around it. Everybody's got their familial role to play, and Tara was happy to be the wild child. She and Naomi drank too much, partied too much, and hung out with the wrong kinds of guys. But it was all working. Admittedly, it worked better for Naomi than for Tara. Naomi got mostly A's in school without trying very hard. She could still score in the teens at a basketball game even if she'd been up most of the night drinking, and she'd already gotten into Tennessee Knoxville with a kick-ass grant and aid package. Yes, she would finish with $60,000 in debt, but UT had a great veterinary program and she'd be done and licensed and making at least that much per year in 5.5. If anybody had a right to party and sleep around a little, it was Naomi Williams. The God-loving stuff was something she was happy to fake, or even mean it a little sometimes, in exchange for the Snyder embrace, which was warm and undeniable, even in its sappiest and most suffocating forms. God wasn't the problem. Mike Snyder was the problem. He was 2 years older than Naomi and started hitting on her when she was about 15. Mike was something of a mythical figure around town. He had a reputation so thoroughly unearned that it defied reason, but there is almost no limit to what a person can achieve early in life when he has the total and unwavering support of a large and uncritical family. It's later that it all turns back on you. But in his early years, and in the Snyder view, Mike was an artist and interpretive dancer and brilliant musician. He was an immensely gifted child of God who must be given space and respect and freedom and money. Plus blowjobs, in Mike's opinion. Naomi held off for a while, but he was so earnest, so tortured and pleading and clearly screwed up beyond his family's ability to see, that she took pity on him. She knew it wasn't right. It wasn't how things were supposed to be, and looking back, she can't believe she was ever so passive. Why did she feel this weird obligation to him that she didn't feel to herself? But she did. They'd go through periods where things would heat up and cool down. There were times she thought she loved him, times she was pretty sure she hated him, but most times she just felt vaguely bad for him. The kid knew he was an imposter even if he couldn't come out and say it, and she wanted to make him calm down and leave her alone. Mike never wanted intercourse, even when Naomi did. probably because he was tortured by the holdovers of the family's start in rigid Catholicism. Mike was the oldest, the only one who'd gone to Catholic grade school, and the talons of guilt were sunk into him but good. There was no sexual encounter with Mike that was not wholly shot through with his crippling sense of shame. Naomi, whose own feelings toward physical love were about a billion times less complicated, didn't press the issue. The last thing she needed was a short, unsatisfying coupling on the floor in the Snyder basement, followed by an image of Mike seared onto her eyeballs. Mike, naked, sobbing in the corner of the half-lit, deep-pile-carpeted basement. Mike, curled up over there next to the Addams Family pinball machine, rocking on his haunches and apologizing to God. But that's exactly what she got on graduation night. Mike had been desperate to find some cultural or chronological benchmark by which he could move fucking Naomi into the realm of the spiritually acceptable, and he'd seized on her high school graduation with the fervor of a horny zealot. He planned his seduction for months. When the moment finally came, she was half drunk, he was half erect, and the result was all-world fumbly, but at least it was quick, and now it was done. Naomi stared at him, over there in the corner. Just a sad, twisted little kid, really. She still felt sorry for him, but mostly she felt relieved that this, at least, would never come up again. So, of course, she got pregnant. At that point, Naomi made three huge mistakes in quick succession that altered the trajectory of her life. First mistake, she told Mike. Mike, she told. The uncritically loved artistic genius who was now 20 years old, still living in his parents' house with no job, no plans for school, and no real artistic talent. A message that the world was in the process of tattooing on his forehead in the unloving and inconsiderate way that the world has with guys like him. But who else was she going to tell? Strategically, it was hard to see that move for the gigantic tactical error that it was until it played out. Because Mike was overjoyed. Mike loved her. Mike wanted to marry her. And Mike immediately told his parents. That really threw Naomi. She rarely miscalculated when it came to guessing human behavior, but she missed this one by a mile. She'd assumed Mike, sobbing naked after bad sex Mike, would be overcome by remorse and do anything to keep his filthy secret to himself, but she didn't consider the full impact of the adoration he had received all his short life. That, coupled with a terrifying early exposure to the ecstasy of the Catholic guilt and confession wash and dry cycle, made him a real loose cannon. The way Mike saw it, he'd been given a rare gift, the chance to do the right thing, and by God he was going to do it. His parents were similarly overjoyed. They had a couple of sinners to forgive, and it was time to get busy forgiving. The fact that Naomi was one of only a few hundred African Americans in Atchison to boot only made it better. It made them better. Plus, they'd all have a baby to raise. Everybody wins. Mistakes 2 and 3 for Naomi fell fast after that first one, and they were things she failed to do, rather than things she did. She failed to drive immediately to CHC in Overland Park to get an abortion, and she failed to tell Tara Snyder, who would have driven her immediately to CHC in Overland Park to get an abortion. Instead, she allowed the Snyder parents to sit her down and paint a picture of such joyous, multi-generational familial love around the presence of this new young life that it carried her through her first trimester and most of her second in conspiratorial silence. It wasn't until her well-conditioned 18-year-old body finally started to show in the fifth month that she knew for sure and for real that she had made a massive mistake. But by then it was too late to do anything about it. Sarah turned 4 the other day, and Naomi would be the first to tell you that she thanked God she had the kid after all. It was impossible to look at that little face and think otherwise, but that didn't mean Naomi's life was any better because things turned out this way. It was just different. Mike had taken off to join the Peace Corps within a week after the baby was born, and in truth, that was a relief. He'd turned into a real pain in the ass once it sunk in that Naomi wasn't going to marry him or sleep with him ever again. He would have made a lousy father anyway. The Snyders made good on their offers to help raise the kid, but Naomi's hand to God, they were morons, and she ended up living with her sister in a half-decent two-bedroom in a new development called Pine Valley, which had nary a pine tree nor a valley within its borders. But the apartment was clean and things were okay. Naomi had gotten used to radical changes in her domestic situation with her mom, so what she was most comfortable with was something that was safe, temporary, and had an uncertain future. Boxes checked on all that. She'd started a job and classes at the community college once Sarah was old enough for daycare, and if she played it all just right, she could be done with veterinary school in another 6.5 years. The most painful part of all of it was the part she never told anyone. Naomi Williams didn't like her child. Yes, she adored her. Yes, she felt a deep and uncompromising love for her. But in moments when Naomi was honest with herself, she would silently admit that she didn't really like her kid. Sarah could be the most loving child you'd ever met in your entire life, and also the most hateful, angry, and debilitating. For 2 years after Naomi's father died of a sudden heart attack at age 53, Sarah, just picking up on the concept of death, had brought up the sensitive issue to her young, grieving mother with the painful consistency of an abscessed tooth. Someone would mention fathers, and the kid would say, "But you can't ever talk to your daddy again, right, Mama?" Or the subject of parents in general would come up, and Sarah would look at Naomi and say, "You only have one parent now, and your other one won't ever come back, right, Mama?" Or, shit, people would just mention that they'd called somebody on the goddamn phone, and the kid would say, "Your daddy won't ever call you again, will he?" Everybody would wince and laugh and say, "She's trying to make sense of death, the poor thing." But Naomi knew vindictiveness when she saw it. Her own kid didn't like her, and she guessed that was okay because it cut both ways. Yeah, she loved her, but she didn't know. Maybe someday. Right now, she just wanted to keep her head down, grab night shifts at the storage place whenever she could, and put a little more money away. Vet school. That was the prize. Both eyes on it at all times. Naomi dumped the trash in the big bin in the far corner of the loading dock and was turning to head back inside when she almost physically bumped into Tea Cake, who'd just burst through the security door from the other side of the complex, feigning a casual demeanor. "Oh, hey," he said. "You work here?" Naomi glanced down at her uniform shirt, then back up at him. "Doesn't everybody wear these?" He laughed. "I'm Tea Cake." "Tea Cake?" "Nickname." "Clearly," she said. "You must have loved that book." "What book?" Their eyes were watching God. "Never heard of it." "Well, somebody named you after a famous character in it." "Nah, that's not it," he said. "How'd you get the name?" "Long story, fairly annoying." It wasn't like Naomi didn't have time, so she just looked at him, waiting. Her brown eyes. Jesus, he never knew. You couldn't tell from the video. Those brown eyes, they didn't look away. And did she ever blink? Her eyes told him to keep going, so he did. "I was like 16 or thereabouts, what have you. Me and some of my boys are rolling around. We got the munchies, so we pull into the Kickapoo on 83. Gonna get some Twinkies. I'm last one in, though. They scoop up all the good hostess stuff and whatnot. All they got left is snowballs, and coconut makes me gag, right?" "If you say so." "I do," he said. "For real. Like, it closes off my throat. What's that one dessert? It's got, like, chocolate powder on it. I had it at an Italian restaurant in Wichita, and if you breathe in wrong, you suck up all the powder, and it closes up your throat, and you choke, and you can't breathe." "Can't say I've ever had that experience." "Well, it's weird. Coconut's like that for me, but chunkier. Hang on, where was I? I wander sometimes, like, verbally." "All the hostess was gone?" "Right. So the only thing left is something called an Aunt Sarah's tea cake. I buy it. I eat it. It's pretty good. So, I don't know, is that a crime? I say I want to go back and get another one. My boys, they think this is some kind of hysterical, funny shit. He wants a tea cake. He wants a tea cake. Hey, tea cake, where's your tea cake?" You know, like crazy, brilliant, witty shit like that starts flying around.
Were there any of those marijuana cigarettes that I've heard about involved in this situation?
"I have no idea what you're talking about. Anyway, that was it. I was Tea Cake, and I haven't heard my given name since."
"Your parents call you Tea Cake?"
"My dad thinks it's a riot."
"Your mom?"
He shrugged. "Even longer story."
She held out her hand. "I'm Naomi."
He took her hand, trying not to look at the way her beautiful brown skin folded gently over her knuckles. Not all gross and shit the way some knuckle skin can be, those weird crackly semicircles that look like an evil knothole in a tree in that one cookie commercial or whatever, but that's how his mind was. It grabbed hold of something and ran off with it, and now he was holding her hand too long, thinking about knuckles, for Christ's sake. She reclaimed her hand with a light tug. He tried to extend the moment any way he could.
I know you haven't been here long, so if there's anything, you know, I don't know, like that you don't know, whatever, just hit me up, okay?
Nothing I can think of, but thanks. Guess I gotta go.
Yeah, me too. Super busy. This place, man, always something, except it's never anything.
She smiled at him. It was hard not to find Teacake moderately charming. She noticed the badly inked snake wrapped around his right bicep, but let it pass without comment. His ink was his business, and she'd seen enough to know where that kind of sloppy tattoo probably came from. He noticed her noticing, and he saw the slight change in the way she looked at him, a tiny lowering of her shoulders, the minutest tilt of the head away from him. It was always the same. If women were smart enough to know him, they were smart enough to not get to know him any better. Shit. Why did he bother? See you around. She headed for the door to the dock. He started to follow, but she glanced at him in the half-full trash can he was holding. Didn't you want to dump that?
All right, yeah, duh, right.
She turned back to the door, and busted, Teacake had no choice but to head for the dumpster. He was almost there when she called out,
Oh, there might be one thing.
He turned back.
Over on your side.
Yeah?
Do you hear a beeping sound?
He looked at her for a long moment, and the voice in the back of Teacake's brain that had been trying to get a hold of his attention finally broke through.
See? The voice said. I told you there was a beep.
Teacake looked at Naomi, his eyes lighting up with the realization.
Your side too?